Hi, my name is Cindy Levinson. I converted to Judaism 20 plus years ago. My husband was raised Reform, and we are raising children in the San Jose area. And
how old are your children?
My son is 11 and my daughter is 14. And the biggest thing I'm struggling with, they're in Jewish day schools and other, I mean, very active in Jewish life, but I'm trying to figure out how to compensate for a very secular, maybe theology, that's being purported in the schools. I want to bring God into their lives more. Okay. And it's not a mitzvot issue, it's more about how to talk with them.
Okay. I'm Laramia Milrod. I have two kids. Jerry Israel is 6 and Seraphel is 3.5. I live in San Francisco, and I don't know, I came here because I'm kind of going through some struggles in my life. You know, I converted to Judaism twice, and then Reform, conservative conversion followed by an Orthodox conversion. It's been studying a long time. I keep kosher and Shomer Shabbos at home and trying to give our children a Jewish education and all that, but it's San Francisco is difficult. You know, there's parts of the Bay Area that we stay a little more. And so we're kind of in the mode right now, and what do we do next? Do we move? Because we're kind of in a, I don't want to say status quo. And I feel like mostly, you know, they have very much, you know, it's like what you said, Jewish values are very important to get behind things, why we do things sometimes, you know, why we love other people and give tzedakah and different things. But also when everyone around them isn't doing what they're doing, how do you...
That's right. That's right. That's the same thing. Okay, good.
Yeah. No matter where you are, it's an issue.
It's an issue.
We're the smallest part of the population, so.
That's right.
Hey, my name is Amy Lerner. I also had like two conversions, but I started my conversion process, and it took 10 years. We lived in Los Angeles, but we didn't live within walking distance to a synagogue. And it was very difficult. All we had to do was move 20 miles north, 20 miles east, or 20 miles south, because we lived right by the beach. It was very difficult to do. It was much easier to move 1,000 miles north to Seattle, Washington, and plop ourselves down in the middle of a Jewish community there. And so while we were in Los Angeles, in Torrance, we went to a Reform synagogue, and we were the most Jewish people my kids knew, because we had like two sets of dishes, and we did Passover, we put everything away, we built a sukkah and everything, and they went to public school, and then we moved to Seattle, and we had this nebulous state. They went to a Jewish day school, but because we hadn't finished our conversion, they weren't Jewish, and then they had the thing, are we Jewish? They had this whole identity crisis. They felt, like my children felt Jewish, but they weren't Jewish, you know? In the Orthodox world sense, and so they had a hard time there, and it still took a while for the conversion to go to complete, even after we moved, and we moved to where we're going to be across the street, where you can see the shul from our kitchen window and living room window, where the shul was going to be built. We knew it was going to be built there, and it took a while for it to get built, but then so we could be literally within walking distance of the shul, like across the street. It took 3 years for it to get built, but anyways, it took more than that for the conversion to go through. So then when we moved to Seattle, my kids felt really weird, because then they were like suddenly like not Jewish, or the least Jewish of the people that they were there, you know. And and then so my kids went through Jewish day schools, and then I sent my older two kids away for high school, and my oldest now is 21, she is a girl, and she's starting to fry out, and my youngest, because of his special needs, I did not send him away for high school, but he's in the public school.
How old is he?
He's 15.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
And but they have a very strong Jewish identity, and but I want him to stay connected.
Okay.
And my middle child, the 20-year-old, is
a boy, a girl.
A boy.
Okay.
He feels I think he feels very, in a way, he's the most religious out of all three, okay. But he's the least participatory. Okay. That's his personality. He's very unparticipatory in life.
Okay, so we're going to move on now. Okay. Thank you. And who else? Devorah? Heidi?
Hi, everybody. My name is Heidi Trilling, and you have to excuse me, my allergies are so intense. I sound very congested. I'm here because I have one daughter who's 10. Like Ellen, I grew up in a reform household back east in New York. A huge, wonderful family full of different, different paths of Judaism, let's put it that way. And also because of marriages with people in other religions, we had this pretty much amazing utopian, I feel like it was a utopian way of dealing with holidays. We did every holiday. So the people who were Christian or Buddhist came to our Jewish celebrations and we went to theirs and we all just learned this wonderful world, global village full of religious values, but we were very clearly defined as a Jewish family. I married a Catholic man, and I have been involved in one of the most unpleasant and contentious divorces in human history. And it is exhausting, but it's almost finished. It was for the best. My daughter is a blessing. She's very centered and grounded and linguistic, and I've been able to talk with her through this process, and so she's doing great. My ex is not a cooperative ex, and there was never ever any religious tensions between us because he kind of entered the fold and he participated in all of our Jewish traditions and ceremonies. Obviously now, because it's two separate households, he is not, keeping up with anything on his end of it, which I understand, and that's fine, because he's teaching her from his perspective. What I've been doing is based more on the things that I'm familiar with and I'm in love with, family history and the foods and the folk tales and we're both learning Hebrew together. I grew up in households with so many languages that I understand Yiddish and Hebrew, smatterings of Russian and Polish and Romanian and all these languages. But we're formalizing it. So what we're doing to uphold, Jewish traditions and values, they're based on scholarship and intellectualism and creativity and artistic. We do art projects based on creating ancient tablets or ancient tapestry. We do things like that. And I guess I'm here just because I would love to hear the community of women bringing up their children in Jewish ways and just be affirmed that I'm doing the right thing in the face of sometimes contentious poo-pooing. And that's right.
Thank you. Rebecca?
I'm Rebecca. I have three children. They're 9, 7, and 6. Two of them go to day school, and one goes to public school because he's also special needs. Just want to hear what Sarah says. I take her parenting class, so just want to continue and see what she says.
Thank you.
My name is Deborah. I have three grown children, one of them married. One of them was engaged and just broke his engagement because the girl was not Jewish, and he figured out it's not going to work. And I'm sad in one way because it's sad for him to go through it, but I'm happy that he figured it out. Both my grandparents, a set of my grandparents, were religious. They came out of Europe. But my parents themselves didn't observe anything. But I know a little bit about kashrut and holidays. I grew up in Israel, so in Israel there is not an issue about being Jewish. You're Israeli, and of course you're Jewish, even though you don't observe anything, you don't go to synagogue or anything. My husband grew up in a kibbutz, so he didn't know anything about Judaism. it was everything that was against Judaism. But when we came here and my kids had to go to Hebrew school, we sent them to Hebrew school after school and from a very early age. And one of my daughter is now moving more towards being religious. The one that's married is married to a Jewish guy that grew up in a very liberal home that have nothing to do with Judaism, very little. But she's taking her little boy to Jewish classes with Israelis, so at least he learned about tradition and holidays and everything. And it's interesting for me to learn a little bit more about Judaism from the religious point, not a custom or food.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so I think let's wrap it. Let's start the class now. Thank you very much for all your input. I think we all want to instill our children with Jewish values. I think that we want to raise our children to be a mensch. We want our children to have good manners, to be polite, to be kind, to be respectful. And even more so, I think we want to raise our children with a healthy sense of what's right and what's wrong in the world, and a sense of morality and what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. The problem is that in today's world, it looks very different than it looks 20 years ago or even 30 years ago. And if it was hard to raise kids then, which I'm sure our parents complained about, I could just tell you it's way harder to raise them now. And I'd like to just go through a few examples of how you think the world has changed. And what was acceptable maybe now and is totally fine now was absolutely unacceptable 20 or 30 years ago. So I have my own examples, but before I use my examples, tell me what you think is different.
I think one of the biggest things that I find is a challenge among young people, and when I work in the schools I see this, is the absolute explosion of social media.
Okay.
And the fact that privacy is no longer a valued or respected entity.
That's right.
And that's really troubling to me.
That's right, an invasion of privacy. Where I have a woman who told me that in seventh grade, which the kids are not even 12 years old, they're not even 13, are on Facebook.
Right.
And her boyfriend, she broke up with him, just put on his Facebook page every single detail of the conversation of the breakup. In detail. Okay? There's no privacy anymore, and it's easy. With the flick of the pen, you could just write it all down, and
it's there forever.
That's right. That's right.
It's forever.
That's right.
As it's posted.
And not only that, but the images and what everyone takes from it is there forever. No one heard her side of the story, right? It's just his bullying that's coming in, and this happens all the time. Yes.
When 20, 30 years ago, there was children's television in the mornings, yes. And now it's or right after school for an hour. Now it's 24-hour junk television and video games. I'll throw that in there, too.
Okay. I would say a lot of television is junk.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting with my kids. I don't have a television, but my parents have a television. So when we go to my parents' house, we're watching the Disney Channel, and all day long, they're just making fun of people. That's what's funny, and that's what gets the laughs, is putting someone down. Putting them down, making fun, getting the last word in. That's what we want our children to be seeing and modeling. And then there's reality television, which is even worse, I heard. I don't even know, because I don't have a television, but someone was telling me yesterday about reality television. Cursing. You could never curse on a television, the amount of violence that's on television.
And sexuality.
sexuality, violence. So
it seems cheap, like cheap sexuality.
Yes.
Not marital loving.
That the emotional giving of a relationship and a deep, strong, healthy relationship, they're not modeling that. Because that's not entertaining. Anything else?
And just in connection with that, it's the sexualizing of the younger and younger girls and boys. I mean, even if you go out and buy clothing for your young girl,
I was going to just say that. The modesty level.
Yes.
Is that they're taking children's clothing and
there's no modesty.
I cannot find long sleeve, short sleeve shirts for my girls. Okay, it's all cap sleeves. And if you go to the store, all the boys' shirts are long sleeve, short sleeve shirts, but not one for the girls.
And the tight little pants.
That's right, all the tight little leggings and the low cut jeans
and the low cut shirts
and they're young.
And the high cut skirts.
That's right.
The interesting thing about that, I get a lot of hand-me-downs from my daughter, from my sister-in-law who's on the East Coast. And the East Coast, they can actually find a little more modest clothing. The West Coast is just...
I shop on the East Coast
or online to get my kids
clothes. And then my
boys go buy
with uniforms, and it's normal. They have a dress code.
Overall, the kids want to be accepted by the peer group. So we as parents a lot of time have to fight the whole community. And it's really hard because the kids don't want to be an outsider.
That's right. There's social pressure.
Even in the Jewish community.
One of my sons, who's 12 years old, got an eye touches for Hanukkah. That's it. The whole Shabbat meal was about eye touches, convincing us that we have to get them an eye touch. And it was a healthy conversation. We went back and forth, and I explained why I think it's a waste of time, and it's socially, you're just sitting there with your eye touch, and everyone else is playing, and it takes you away from important things that you need to do. And I gave them a whole, and they were telling me, yes, but it's better than this, and it's a really great idea, and, you know. A lot of social pressure.
And they say it's social to be four kids next to each other playing the game, and they're on the screen, they're together, all their little cars.
Right, they say we can play together. We'll play all the same game on our own eye touches together.
The other thing to do is to go out to a cafe on a date. And you're sitting at the same table, but
and you're texting
each other.
Texting. I went out with my husband to a restaurant, and I saw two men having a business meeting. And while they're having the business meeting, they're texting. I couldn't believe it. And we got our daughter texting on her phone, and she's a teenager. And we set a set of rules for her. And one of the rules is you cannot text when you're with your friends. Right? It's not menschlich. So, and a respect for authority. Yeah.
I have a question, which is getting back to the idea of value. One of the things that all of these things point to, especially the social media and the invasion of privacy, and also this lack of respect for authority business. What is it, in your opinion, that makes people in this generation or whatever it is think that it's okay to disrespect others this way? What is that that's missing there? Because the nicest, sweetest friends of my daughter, these charming little girls, but they have no problem posting the most
vicious,
intimate language and anecdotes on, you know, there's a breakdown of the membrane.
I'll tell you something.
Privacy.
I really, really believe.
What has happened?
I really believe that it's a breakdown in the home. I believe that the home is a foundation to bring up your children. And you need a strong home. And you've got to teach this in your home. I believe that a home is a laboratory for the world. And whatever you're teaching your children in your own home is how they're represented in the world. I could see it in my classroom. I teach students. I'm teaching first graders. I can see which students have learned the values in their home and which students do not have a respect for authority. Yeah.
I was the most strict parent in every aspect of clothing, movies, whatever, in a Jewish day school, with very secular values, by the way. And my daughter suffered terribly for it.
Okay, we'll talk about. Okay, we'll
so
talk.
We have the
okay.
home, but then there's the rebellion.
I agree. There has to be a balance, but but you have to also remember that you've got to think about the values you're instilling and the environment your children are in, so that you have to make sure that you're putting your child either in an environment that's in sync with your values, or that you're going to be a little less strict on your values if the environment is not in sync with your values.
Yeah.
Meaning that in my community, children that my children's ages, let's say third grade, fourth grade, would never touch the internet,
right?
And that's a value to me, in let's say, in my Orthodox community. But I live in Palo Alto. And as strong a value as it is for me, I have to remember the environment that my children are in. And even though they're in Orthodox day school, they're surrounded by a much lesser families with lesser values than myself, right? So there are certain things that are non-negotiable, but I also have to be aware that when it comes to Gmail, right, that, you know, I had to let my kids use it at a very young age, with limits, and then I would look at it, and I have to know the password, but I have to let them, because if not, they'll rebel against me. Because a parent cannot walk around saying no, 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 if everyone else can do it. And if I chose to live in Palo Alto, where my children are going to this, in this environment, I have to be reasonable, whereas I try to make my house the base,
right,
where the kids come to my house to play, where the kids come to my house to do everything, so that the values are coming in my house. But when they're in school, my children don't watch movies. They don't go to the next all the movies that come out, because that's not a value to me, and they know that. But again, when I raise my kids with my own values, I make it more exciting not to go to the movie. Okay? You have a birthday party and you're going to that movie. You know what? We're going to do something even better. Okay? So that it's more exciting to do what we're doing than what they're doing. Okay? So I'm creating two sides of it. On the one side, I'm trying to be aware of the values and being what they're getting or what I'm giving. But on the other hand, when I do have a value like Shabbat, and the other kids are not celebrating Shabbat, either I bring the kids into my home, or I say, we're going to have a much better time, guys, because it's going to be so much fun at our house, right? And that's what we're trying to create. I would just say that when we're Jews and we live in a host culture, it's impossible not to adapt the values of our host culture. That's throughout the millennia. That's what Jews have always done. I'll give you examples, right? That when the Jews came into Israel, Eretz Yisrael, it was called, after 40 years in the desert, and they were told to inherit the land. Well, they inherited the land, but they left many host cultures in their land, which was a mistake. And what ended up happening is that the Jews learned from that value system, and they started with idolatry. The Jews started worshiping idols because they were learning. They were around their neighbors, and they saw, and it was definitely a very strong urge to worship something that you could feel and see, as opposed to an invisible God. And they were influenced. All through the millennia, you can see in Jewish history, if you're a historian, that Jews are always influenced by their host culture. In the Beit HaMikdash, I teach 8th grade now, so I just learned this, but in the Beit HaMikdash, the second temple, there was a gate that was called the Kifonos Gate. It's named after a Greek rose garden, okay? And this is the Holy Temple, okay? But they took this Greek name, because there was a beautiful rose garden right outside this gate, and they called it the Kifonos. They called it after a Greek name. We internalize the values of our culture, of the culture we're in. In Spain, there were many Ladino songs, beautiful Jewish Ladino songs. And in America, there are many beautiful Jewish songs that are written in English. We adapt. We assimilate the culture. The question is, how much are we assimilating the culture? Are we assimilating the culture as to take away our Jewish values? Or are we assimilating the culture to enhance our Jewish values, to develop our Jewish values? That's what we want to do. If we're taking the culture, it has to fit into our values and build our values and not destroy our values. And so now I want to take a few minutes to discuss what kind of values do we want to instill in our children. If you had to think of the top five values that you want to give over to your children, and again, I have my own list, what is it that you are trying to instill? If you had to say, you know, the top five Jewish values I want my child to walk away with by the time they're grown up and form their own house of their own, what would it look like? And again, there are hundreds of values. I'm just telling you out there because all day long you're making value judgments on many values. So top five is a joke. Yeah.
I'd like my children to, and this is what I'm struggling with the most right now, is a sense of God in their life.
Okay, so I would say a relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we have mitzvot in our family, but we don't have the thought of God.
A relationship with God.
I think a respect for Jewish teachings and tradition.
Okay.
And family, to me, is hooked up with that.
So a respect for Jewish teaching, tradition, and a respect for Jewish family. Okay. Shandy?
I would say a chavivut ha-mitzvot, but a love of the mitzvot. That they shouldn't be a drudgery and hardship.
Okay. Anyone else?
Loving your fellow Jew and other people.
Okay, so
I would say
respect. A respect for, let's go a little detailed, a respect for
parents,
siblings, parents, teachers,
yeah.
Authority, right? Friends. Okay.
I would also say, I guess, a knowledge or foundation that the Torah is truth.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay, so these are very similar to mine. Mm-hmm. Do you want to know why? Okay, so I said honoring parents, respect towards siblings, friends, teachers. I also said chesed, midot. Okay, the value would be chesed, integrity, responsibility, okay, a love of God, forming a relationship with Him, the value of following God's will, of mitzvot, and I wrote a love of Shabbat. Okay, now we're up to the hard part, guys. That was all the intro. That was easy. How do we instill these? Okay, we have our grand list over here. How are we going to instill this? Okay, so I am going to give you 4 points now of how to instill these. Okay, and I hope that it's helpful. And if you have questions, you let me know. Okay?
Sorry about my phone calls. My husband looking for my daughter's sparkling shoes, and I saw it was him, and I thought it was a terrible thing.
Okay. Yes, it is.
Where are the purple sparkling shoes?
That's okay. So funny. So I think that instilling these values, the first thing you have to know is, and again, it's not all in the same order, but the first thing is knowledge. Okay? I think you have to know what your values are before you're able to instill them. You have to know what's important to you and what's a value to you. Okay? Yes?
And I guess that also means the two parents have to instill
that. I was going to say, for some of you that are two parents, right, then I would sit down with your husband and have a talk with him and say, what kind of values are important in our family and how do we want to instill this? I remember sitting down with my husband one time and saying, okay, we have no rules in our house. What rules are we going to make that are like non-negotiable, right? These are things that we're going to be on the same board for. If this happens, then we're going to do this. And what values are important to us? I also believe that it's important to reevaluate your values every so often, that it's not just you make up your value system and you live by it, but that we're always growing and we're always changing. So that it's not just knowledge of your values, but it's writing them down, thinking about them, and then reevaluating them every so often and seeing, you know, have they changed? How are they working? How is it going? Am I instilling? Okay? Then I would say, after you have the knowledge, you have to sit down and think to yourself, well, when my child is not doing this value, and I'm going to give you the list, and then we're going to take a real example, and then we'll plug it in. Okay? When my kid is not following this value, what will I do? Okay? So, what are my consequences going to be? Okay? Am I going to look the other way? Am I going to back down on this value? Am I going to say, no, on Friday night we eat at home? Okay? What are my consequences? How will I handle? What will be acceptable behavior? What is unacceptable behavior with this value? Okay? Third, okay, just like a home is built on bricks, you have to have bricks and bricks and bricks and bricks and bricks and many bricks to build a home. So too, our home is built on bricks where we're instilling bricks of values into our home. We keep putting in bricks of values, of what is important to us. And the bricks are, chesed is a brick, integrity is a brick, shalom, the environment can be a brick, how much we take care of our environment. And each parent decides, each family decides on which bricks they're using to build their home. So how are you going to take this value and instill it as a brick in your home? Through stories, through articles that you've just read, bringing it into your home, bringing it alive in your home, letting it be there. It's not just dormant. It's alive. It's a discussion. It's happening. It's budding. It's building in your home. You have to actually physically build a value into your home. When I wanted to work on Lashon Hara, which is negative speech in my home, because I felt it was becoming a problem, I bought a kid's book on Lashon Hara, and every supper time we would sit and we would read a chapter, a little cartoon about it, and discuss it. Did it really, really help? I think it helped a little bit. I really do. I didn't know exactly how to instill it. And I decided, you know what, for the next 10 weeks, right, when I wanted to instill gratitude in my home, I took a notebook. And by supper time, and this didn't last too long, unfortunately, but by supper time, we would go around the table and discuss what we were grateful for that day. When the kids were like, and everything negative, right? So I said, guys, let's work on our gratitude. What are we thankful for? What happened today that you're thankful for? So it's being creative about instilling this value as a brick in your home. And even teaching the laws, the halachot, of what this value is. There are many, many laws relating to respecting our parents, respecting our siblings, our friends, right? There's laws related to it. What are those? Explain it to our children. The fourth I would say is, are you a personal example? Because no matter how much we talk, from today until tomorrow, our kids don't do the mantra of, do as I say, not as I do, right? Our kids model us. They learn from us. They want to be like us. And so, as hard as it is, every value that we want to instill has to be something that is important to us and that we ourselves might not have gotten there, but we're definitely working on it. Okay? It's something that my mother, I was telling you, right? She didn't grow up religious her whole life, but she always had that feeling of growing. When she was an adult and she moved to New York, she went as an adult to Stern College, where young women learn. And my mother was in her 40s, and she went to learn in Stern College, pregnant with my brother in her 40s. She was 40 years old, and she was sitting there breaking her teeth over the Hebrew and breaking her teeth over the Rashis, and she just wanted to study, and she wanted to learn more about her Judaism. And she had a lifelong quest for growth, and she didn't have to tell us it. We knew it. It was in our. It came through just by watching her that we felt that desire to grow in our own relationships. and our own Judaism. So are we a personal example? Okay. Now, before I give you the next point, I want to put this into a context. Okay, let's say that the value is honoring our parents. Okay? That would be the value that we want to instill. Okay? So you sit down, either by yourself or with your husband, and you say, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to instill honoring our parents into our home. Enough with the talking back, enough with the rolling the eyes, enough with the stomping and slamming the door and running out of the room. This is not happening. We are honoring our parents. Okay? So you decided this is important to you and you're going to work on this. Okay, consequences. Well, what's going to happen when they talk back, when they, thank you, when they talk back, when they roll their eyes, when they, right? Okay. If they do such a thing, right, I'm going to say in a very calm voice, sweetheart, I'm not available for this kind of conversation. When you're ready to speak properly, come back to me. Okay? It works. Very calm. Because you don't have to be frustrated or out of control when you know your value. When you know your value, you're not yelling at the kids uncontrollably. Because I know my value. And I'm strong with it. And I believe it. And it's a value to me.
That's the key, the strength inside of you.
That's it.
If they were going to touch a hot stove, you'd be absolutely no, because it would absolutely be that they shouldn't touch the fire.
That's right.
It should be that strong.
That's right, because it's coming from a place inside of you that's deep and strong and real.
Right.
Okay?
No waffling, because they can
know when it's... No waffling. They know when mom says, like, okay, fine, go to the movie, right? No. This is a value. I don't want you watching our movies. And our house is no our movies. Finished.
Right.
Yeah.
Touching the stove is more like protecting against that. You move fast, you grab a hand. No, it's firm. That's my instinctive reaction. And I know I need to react exactly how you said to. It's more of a struggle. Being calm and quiet. Because maybe we're trying to get something accomplished in a short period of time. And if I wait for them to come back later, just other things fall apart. But I agree with you. I need to learn how
so
to do that.
So you got to learn, because they'll react much better when you say that, okay? Think to yourself, what am I going to say when they talk back to you? We don't talk back to a mother. Say that differently. I need to hear that in a different way. This is not respectful to a parent. Okay, my kids contradicted me. Last night, a kid was saying, it's called rachilas. Rachilas is when you... don't speak negative about someone. You say, do you know what so-and-so said about you? Right? So one of my kids had done something, like, pretty bad. And I was mentioning it to a friend of mine, and somebody was listening. Right? So last night, she said, or he said, whatever, do you know what mommy said about you? That is unacceptable. It's unacceptable because it's rechilas. Okay? And it's unacceptable because it's disrespectful to a parent. And immediately, I knew what my value was. I knew what the problem was. And we both, my husband and I, that is not how you speak about a parent. And that is not, that's called rechilas. You may not say that. And the child got very, and stopped. But a child may not contradict a parent. A child may not raise their voice to a parent. There are certain things a kid can never say to a parent. Okay? If I would want to work on that, I would have to think, what is non-negotiable ways of speaking to me that you may not speak to me that way? Okay? Then, instilling is a brick. Maybe I would sit down and explain to them the laws of parenting, of honoring a parent, the importance of honoring a parent. Honoring a parent is like honoring God. The gratefulness that a child needs to have to their parents. No matter what a parent does, the biggest gift they gave you is they brought you into this world. I don't care if you like the supper or you don't like the supper. Say it in a respectful way. I'm a person. I'm your parent. That is not how you speak to me. And I'm happy to listen to you when you talk to me properly. This will teach them eons. When they go, remember this is a laboratory, when they go out into the world and they hear you say that, they'll speak to their friends properly because you set the limits, and you set the bar of what's of value to you. And then, personal example, how do we honor our parents? Do you call your parents every night? Do you have a relationship with them? Do you also put them down? What's happening with your relationship to your parents? Because our kids are always looking to see what our personal example is. So I'm saying that's an example of a kind of value we would want to instill. Okay? I'll tell you one last thing, and then we have to stop, unfortunately, because I have a little bit more to say. We instill values in our children when they see our reaction to something. Okay? We are reacting all the time. Based on our reaction, they know what our value is. Which means that it forces us to take pause when our kids are doing something to think for a second, what is the value I'm trying to give over before you react? Because if you don't, then they think, oh, she just cares about the money. Oh, she just cares about the kitchen floor. She doesn't care about me. She just cares that it's a mess. Right? What's the value you're trying to instill? And I have a lot of examples, right? A kid comes home and he goes, hey, it's not fair. He got a new watch and I didn't get one. Right? So you say, oh, I feel so bad. I'm going to buy you a new watch. You're right. What are you instilling? You're right. It's not fair. You're instilling the value that everyone should get the same thing, and that's what fair is. 1 second. Maybe that's not the value you're trying to instill. Maybe you're trying to instill that fair is everyone gets what they need to get. You're right, Babala. He needed a watch. You don't need a watch right now. You don't even know how to tell time. You know, could be when you grow up you'll get a watch, but right now he didn't. A kid comes home and says, hey, she learned with her special ed teacher and she got a lollipop. It's not fair. I also want a lollipop. You can give in and say, sure, Shefala, here's a lollipop. You could also have one. What value are you instilling? Instilling jealousy? That every time they're jealous of another kid, they should also get the same thing? Think for a second. Do I want to instill that? 1 second. Why don't I instill they should be happy for their sister? Do you know how hard she's been working? She's been working with this teacher for 3 months, and she finished this book. Let's all be happy for her. Good for you. Enjoy your lollipop. I remember my kids had a baking class when they were very little, and my daughter came home with this huge, delicious cookie that she had made. And it was so delicious. It was so delectable, and she always shared her cookie with her friends, my daughter. And my daughter was like a real Pachechi spoiled kid, and she was the little one. She said, I want that cookie. I want that cookie. And I made the older daughter go into her room to eat that cookie. That was wrong. I did the wrong thing. What value am I teaching her? You worked so hard to make the cookie. She should enjoy the cookies. There's no reason she has to share it. It's her cookie. So that, like what I said, when it's 1,000 values, there are 1,000 little values in our lives that we're working on. And when we react, we're teaching our children what our value is. So a lot of times we have to stop and think. I'll give you one more example. You're sitting at the table during supper, and your husband, the kids are fighting, and or someone's fighting, and your husband says, I can't believe it. I can't handle this. You go to your room, and he doesn't even punish the other kid. Right? And you're like, Josh, you can't do that to the kid. It's not right. Listen, they were both fighting. I think you should also punish that kid also in the supper table in front of the kids. What value are you teaching the kids? Right? You're teaching the kids that what your husband did is wrong. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't know what he's doing. Your husband can't manage the kids. Terrible value. Endorse your husband. When you're private in your room, you know, I don't know if that was the best thing to do. Endorse your husband. So many times we react without thinking. We have to think about our values before we react. Pause. Think. And same thing with, you know, Shabbat's no fun because da-da-da. Shabbat is so much fun, da-da-da, right? Think, right? And tell stories and discuss and build. And our kids, believe it or not, as much as you think they're not listening to us, they are. They're listening to everything we say. And we're the most important person to them. As much as it doesn't always look like that, they really, really are. And so I give you all a blessing that we should you know, be able to incorporate this, and I'm always available. You can call me. I also give parenting classes, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Funny, that was a sort of personal example. I had a very tough week last week. I just bought like a used car in September, which I really didn't want to do because I was hoping the old one would run forever and ever. And we're backing out of the garage, and the garage is really cluttered right now. There's stuff everywhere, and the children are fighting and yelling over something in the car. And I'm like, shush, 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 be quiet, because it's a real narrow garage in San Francisco. I'm trying to get out. What do I do? Crunch.
Oh, no.
I scrape the edge of it, and I, kids, I told you, be quiet now. I crunched my car, and my son felt so bad, and I had to backtrack on that. And I said, Jerry, it's okay. I was distracted, too. We're all, you know, it's just a car. You're more important than the car. And he does a huge crash on the side, and I told him we can fix it. It's no big deal. And he was good with that. But I had to backtrack.
You had to backtrack. And that's okay to backtrack sometimes, but sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
Because you don't want, even if you overreact sometimes, if you backtrack, then the kids will think that what they did was okay.
Yeah.
And what they did wasn't okay. It's true you overreacted, but sometimes it's better not to say anything because, unless you really did something wrong to the child, because you don't. Right.
It's my fault for
completely. Right. No, I hear that. I hear that.
The squabbling in the car was back there.
To class.